Today's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/rolltohit.
Holy shit, though. If they made PT on the PC so you could use Oculus,
oh my God.
People would literally die. Yeah, that'd be...
People would die.
Yeah, that's probably why they haven't. Their lawyers are like, are you crazy? People will die!
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 31 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
So, I know everybody knows how much I hate talking about this, but since I don't have anything going on in my life right now, Sean has been bumming my PlayStation. He won't buy one, but he's been coming over to bum my PlayStation so that he could play Bloodborne, which thankfully for him, my brother paid for, or else he would not
buy it. I mean, it's a
right
community
now.
Experience. We all need to... search for blood together.
I've actually watched you play, I think, for a couple few hours already.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I got to pass a few bosses.
I have to say, I think out of the other the whole Dark Souls games, this is probably the one that I would be more inclined to play slightly. But that
means a lot.
Slightly, yeah.
I'd
play for 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's saying... I think that's about as far as I've gotten in any other game, right? It's about 15... No, I tried Dark Souls 2. I got about like 30 minutes.
I mean, I can understand. If you go down towards the skeletons, you're just screwed.
Yeah, so I'm still not going to play it, but I'm just slightly more inclined to play it.
I imagine that Rob secretly loves the game. He just won't tell me.
I've been playing it night and day.
Yeah. But it's a good game. So they're not our sponsor, but if you want to play a good game... Bloodborne. It's good stuff.
You're going to get them to pay us for that?
I don't know. Hopefully.
Just be glad they don't sue you, right?
Hey, Miyazaki's a cool guy. He's into that kind of thing.
No.
Yeah. I mean, all the way from Japan. I've been there so many times. Well, speaking of games, on a completely unrelated
nice.
Note.
King of transitions.
Is that what the podcast is about? I recently played Ori and the Blind Forest. For those of you who don't know, it's, I guess, an indie game. It's an exclusive... Actually, no, it's for Xbox One and PC. But it... And I don't mean this to be hyperbolic. I think it might be the most beautiful game I've ever played.
Wow.
That's
a bold statement.
Yeah, but, you know, so it's an animated game, I guess I would say. It's not necessarily... Cartoony is kind of the wrong word, but it's not full-on 3D graphics. But it's incredibly, it's really well animated. And there are so many little details that they do in the game. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of different environments, but there's so much life to the world that you can only add... It's like that element of whimsy, I guess you could say, that, you know, when you think of... why can't I think of... My Neighbor Totoro and Princess Mononoke.
Mononoke, yeah.
Who's that? That's,
I think wow, this Miyazaki, is right?
Yeah, Miyazaki, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, you know, you think of that same element. There's something it adds to it that's just, you just feel that connection to it. And I felt that. And so, thinking this is not like a full 3D world that's using Unreal Engine or something like that. How do you guys value art direction in games or just art in general and when it refers to games? Like, is it important to you? And
so it's interesting because, like, I've only recently gotten into indie games, and mostly because you've introduced me to a lot of them. I think, like, Hotline Miami was one of the first indie games that I was just really, really into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think I was just caught up in, I had to have the best graphics. Like, I just wanted the most realistic looking things, right? And that was a big thing to me, and that's why I gravitated towards AAA games. But, yeah, over the last couple of years, I think I've shifted way away from that, right? So I've started going much more towards indie games, which tend to have some, you know, whether it's... It actually tends to be a lot of the art and sound direction. Like, Transistor was another one I really, really enjoyed, which had a fantastic soundtrack. Like, the art was absolutely incredible in that game. But yeah, I think, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older, like I appreciate different aspects of games, or, you know, I can appreciate different aspects of the game besides just gameplay. That said, I think a lot of the games that I would pick out for being good looking games also are just fantastic games to play.
Sure.
Right. So I don't know that would I play a game that just looked amazing or had a really cool art style if it sucked, you know?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, a perfect example of that. I mean, Crysis 3 is still kind of a benchmark for games. It's so technically beautiful. I mean, the joke is always like hair physics and grass physics. But it really, I mean, they have HDR bloom effects. They have ambient occlusion, like all these little things. But for most people, the world of Crysis, just you don't really connect to it. It's just technically beautiful. So, you know, if you don't make that connection.
Yeah, I you know, aesthetics, general aesthetics of the game are actually really important to me. They make a big impact. You know, I won't not play a game if I'm really interested in it and I don't think the graphics or art direction are very good. But, you know, one of the reasons I'm not keen on a lot of PlayStation, well, I don't know if it's just PlayStation games or maybe if it's more, I'm just going to sound racist, right? But like Japanese developers. This is going to sound weird, but I don't like the fonts that they use and the menu system.
Yeah.
Like they use a serif font and the menus are just really clunky and ugly and they just pop out at you, right? Rather than like having a theme or blending into the game some way, somehow. Mm. So, yeah, you know, aesthetics down to the menu systems and all that make a big difference for me. You know, I think about Dragon Age 1 and 2. So Dragon Age 2, they really changed the art style and kind of made it more kind of animated, cartoony, and stylized. And I remember a lot of people, I guess it was kind of split down the middle, but a lot of people didn't like it. And I actually liked it a lot. And ironically, it was the gameplay elements that really let me down from the transition from Dragon Age 1 to 2. So, you know, definitely the aesthetics can make a big difference in how I generally feel about the game emotionally and and how I fondly remember it or not. Definitely it's important to me.
I mean, the last game I can think of that had really good art direction and I felt like it was pretty, although it was more technically proficient than I would say Ori is, I would think would be Bioshock Infinite, because it was slightly cartoony, but there was a way they used a lot of effects that, I mean, I still remember, I mean, I don't think this is a spoiler, but there's a part where you kind of go to Paris. I haven't been to Paris, so I'm not saying that, oh, it reminds me so much of that, but it's just, it felt like I was someplace, and it was someplace I wanted to be. It's making a place emotive versus just having something that is, wow, we have really HD textures. Like, really, they're just... So it's that combination of art direction, style, and, you know, technical brilliance. Now everything is about immersion. Kind of like you said, you know, you just talked about menus. You think about all these VR games, for example, Star Citizen and Elite Dangerous. All their menus are built in. And it's, I think it
looks so good.
It might have even started... the earliest game I can remember is Dead Space, where, you know, your health is actually this bar on your back.
Mm-hmm.
The menus, like, you see it in the game. There was no explicit menus except for the intro menu. So I think on the immersion factor, they're definitely thinking of that integration, but...
I think like Telltale is another one for me, right? Where it's just that like comic book style, like it's not supposed to be realistic at all. Like Borderlands is another example.
Well, I've always loved cel shading games, whether they're good or not. I just like that style. Like
there's one game that did cel shading really well.
That one on the Wii, super violent. It's got that guy who like orders mail orders.
Not Killer 7. Are you talking about?
Yeah, where it's the same. Heroes something, no heroes, no more heroes. Is that it?
Man, this must be really exciting
for you. Yes. Call in if you...
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyhow, I've always really liked cel-shaded
games.
We'll
edit it in post.
And, but historically, actually, some of the cel-shaded games were not that great, so I didn't end up buying them or playing them. But you know, I like that style.
I mean, even look at a few years ago when Journey came out, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that was by many regards the game of the year, right? Which was not a AAA title by any means.
Nope.
And it was largely because of the art and the sound that was going into the game. And I think, you know, it shows, and not to get like all, you know, like high and mighty about games, but like it kind of shows the evolution of games, right? I mean, how important as consumers too, that we appreciate the art direction and the style of the games, not just the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, we have more powerful machines and things that can show a lot more detail. Just having more pixels on the screen lets you show more detail and get the shading and the gradients and all that stuff. Not even, you know, lighting effects and all that. You know, you just need more pixels on the screen.
How bloody is your blood?
But, you know, I think back to, like, Ultima 6, which is a pretty old game, but you know, last week we were talking about Star Citizen and Wing Commander. So, you know, Wing Commander had good art direction, and that was, you know, a very pixelated game by our standards. But I liked the design of the ships. I thought it was really cool. And you know, a lot of purists will say that technically X-Wing was a better game. And even though I love the Star Wars universe, I felt like Wing Commander, I like the color palette, I like the design of the characters and the spaceships a little bit better. So,
well, you know, X-Wing definitely was more, I guess, polygonal, whereas I feel like Wing Commander was a little bit more drawn ships. I remember, so a lot of the X-Wing games would be flat textures, but it was cool because it felt a little more 3D.
Yeah.
But the Wing Commander games had more art.
Sprites.
And sprites. But, you know, I also think, I mean, even, you know, even not going that far back, although, you know, I didn't play that much, but Shadow of the Colossus is a game that's just really beautiful. And that reminds me of a game that's supposed to be coming out soon, which is Rime. Well, I don't know when it's going to come out, but it reminds me of that. And you even think No Man's Sky. I mean, what makes it look so cool is the color palettes they're using. Mm-hmm. The combinations they're using is really what makes it so striking.
Yeah.
And then even before that, like
Child of Light last year, I think, was another
game. Yeah, Child. That whole system, the that indie system, man, we are forgetting everything. I think it's Ubisoft, like art. It's like the same thing that Rayman runs on. Mm-hmm. Whatever that system is really good for art.
It's good for art.
Yeah. So.
So I think that's a good place to
art
transition. Yes, thank you. So what I wanted to talk about was title. T-I-D-A-L.
Say it in a British accent. Maybe we'll understand it.
Well,
it's actually pronounced T-doll.
So Siri can't understand it. Like I kept talking to Siri, and I wanted to take notes on what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
And it just kept writing title. And yeah, clearly that doesn't work. So anyhow, title was kind of – it's not – it didn't come out this week, but you know, Jay-Z recently purchased it, and he kind of messaged what his new plans for that platform are. Yesterday, and so I thought it'd be good to talk a little bit about Tidal, and then also, you know, some of the other music platforms, streaming platforms out there.
Mm-hmm.
So Tidal, I think it's going to be $10.99. I can't remember if it's $10 or $10.99 a month.
I know it's a little more expensive than Spotify.
Yeah,
so
I think Spotify is $8.99 a month, and this is going to be $10.99 a month. So a little more expensive. So what are you getting for that expense? You're getting supposedly some exclusivity to for songs. So several artists have already signed up kind of and said that they will be releasing their music first. Not only, but first on that platform. So people like, I think, Alicia Keys, Jay-Z, obviously Beyonce, his wife.
Hanson.
Okay.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
I was ready to sign up.
Mbop.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Alicia Keys and a couple others. I think even Madonna was there, too. So pretty interesting model. And so that brings up a follow-up that I'll come in with a little bit later. But so you'll get that exclusivity for a certain timeline, and then also you get higher bitrate sampling, and so it's
supposed
to be... I
think that's the main draw, right?
Yeah, so it's going to be higher quality. It's going to sound like an actual CD. It's not high fidelity like the Pono player, but it's streaming
CD
quality Because most of the stuff that we're listening to from Spotify and Beats and Pandora, it's not CD quality, it's radio quality.
So will I be able to notice that difference, do you think?
That's the test.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's really dependent on, you know, how familiar you are with the song. It's dependent on what system you're listening to. If you're listening to the car, in the car, you know, are you driving, all the road noise? Because, you know, I can put in just my regular white ear pods from my iPhone, and it sounds incredibly good compared to what I'm listening to in my car when I'm driving at 65 miles per hour on potholes on the road and all that stuff. So
on pot road,
on pot road, you know, pot road where you, yeah. Jay-Z and I used to drive on pot road. So that's title, and then we have, you know, Spotify is kind of the 800-pound gorilla because they have the most subscribers, paid subscribers, and just I think the highest subscription
even and industry in free. Back.
Yeah, and so people like to talk about Beats, but last time they announced how many paid subscribers they have, and they're paid only. Actually, they had less than 1 million paid subscribers.
Mm. I think it was
maybe a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah,
so,
wow, that's
yeah. really low. So it's much lower than I think Spotify has 8 million users and 3.5 million subscribers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, you know, they're definitely the
fish.
Subscription service to beat. But so what do you guys think? So Rob, you're using Xbox.
I use Xbox Music, yep. right? And obviously a large part of that played from when I still had the Windows Phone, and you know I used the Surface, so it was nice to have, you know, one service across all my devices.
Right.
So that played a big part in going it. That said, since I've been using it, I really enjoy it. So it's $10 a month, but I think when I
oh really
yeah, but when I got it though, okay. there was a deal. It was like $50, I think, for the year.
Yeah,
which you know is. Half that, right? So and I ended up getting a gift card for another year, so I have it for like 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
So I'm kind of tied to it for better or worse. That said, like, you know, like I've been saying, I mean the app for the iPhone is not that good, which is really disappointing because every other Microsoft app that they put on there is better than what they put on Windows Phone. But outside of the app though, I mean I still use it on my Surface. I absolutely love the service itself. I haven't.
What about the selection? Have you ever found a song, come against a song that you couldn't find on there?
Very rarely. I mean, if it's a song that that's come out recently, I've always been able to find it. That said, I don't listen to the radio that much, and I don't really know what the kids are listening to these days. So I haven't. It's only been a few times where I've come into songs, and the songs I looked up were pretty obscure too. It's not like they were major artists. I love that service, but that said, I haven't tried another one. I haven't used Spotify, you know, I haven't used, any other service, so I have nothing to really compare against.
Sean, so you're using Google?
I use Google Music, and Google Music started as a music locker service, meaning you can upload your own music and then you can play it through the cloud. They didn't have a Spotify-like service when I started using it. Now they do, and they also have YouTube Music Key, so you can listen to music on YouTube. But I've used Spotify, and the reason why I didn't like it is the weirdest reason. When I open it up, you have to search for what you want to listen to, and I have no starting point. I don't know what I want to listen to. On Google Music, since it's my music locker, I know all my recently played songs and things like that. And Spotify, a lot of people leverage the social aspect. You know, you have friends playlists and things like that. But so the two problems I had with Spotify was that first, I just didn't know what to play. And the radio was really bad. Pandora was way better.
Yeah.
The second problem I had, which is another weird one, was... And this only happens with some artists. If you go somewhat older artists, they have a lot of albums and a lot of different versions of songs. Like Nina Simone, she has a billion versions of
eight
the same
versions
song.
Of every song.
And the problem is, I don't know which version is the
not,
one
you're
I
not a real
like.
Fan. Come on.
Oh, well, this is the thing. So I would look.
You
up
don't
the
know that
I
her
want.
1967 performance
is the best.
At so the Cotton Club, like, yeah. is by far the best version.
You know, like I
Live
had one album of my own, and I knew which version I liked, and then I'd have to spend an hour. I mean, this is a little bit more of a rare problem. But my bigger issue was that I just didn't know where to start. So I like and Google Music, although I don't have it. It has a Spotify-like service as well, so I guess you can get the best of both worlds, which is kind of nice. I really like it. Just having everything in the cloud for me is awesome, because literally anywhere I go, I can just access it. And since it has a web app, that's pretty good, or it's good enough, then I can just, it doesn't matter what device I'm on, I can always listen to my music.
Yep, streaming music, definitely that's a way for me to go. You know, I don't keep any music on my phone anymore, so just lots more storage, that sort of thing. I started out by using Spotify, and at some point I stopped. I used to subscribe to it. I paid for it for a little while, and then canceled it after I started listening to a lot more audiobooks. But then I switched over to Beats when I got a free subscription, because they had this deal with AT&T. To, like, you know, you got 3 months free or something like that for a family plan. So I started using that, and the thing I liked about it, I've talked to Rob about this before. So I went back to I found this listing of the Billboard Top 100 for every year since they've been making Billboards music listings. So I went to the 80s and I started making a playlist of, you know, all the top 100 songs for 1980, 1981, et cetera, et cetera. And my plan was to take all those years individually and mash them into one giant playlist. Mm-hmm. And Beats lets you combine two multiple playlists into one. So it's that tiny technical thing that I was like, yeah, I guess I'll keep Beats. Because Spotify, I couldn't do that. I would have had to make that master's playlist. Yeah. And I was like, nope, that's not happening.
Essentially, I've never tried
so, that. So that's why I use Beats. As far as their selection goes, it's pretty good, but there are some songs, especially, so some songs, especially because I was making this crazy, you know, top 100 1980s playlist. So, like, the 93rd song in 1980, you know, doesn't exist. You can't find that song. So there's some gaps in my playlist. Each year has about probably 3 to 4 songs missing. And then certain artists are just completely missing, like Peter Gabriel. He is not to be found. And for a long time, it was the same with the Beatles, right? Like, they did not allow their music to be streamed. And now I think Apple has exclusive rights to the Beatles or something like that. I forget exactly, but maybe it's the exclusive rights to sell, but maybe others can stream. I don't know exactly. But, you know, so my point is there are going to be gaps test it.
I have run into that issue where I had artists and then didn't have them at another point.
They'll come and go sometimes. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah,
the licensing changes.
A certain album, like Nina Simone that I listen to a lot, she had albums on a lot of different distributors. So
yeah. And I wish they had better notification, because I had the song Hey Ho by the Luminaires and it disappeared from my playlist. And
not like, Hey Ho.
Yes. But it disappeared and... I couldn't figure it out. So I did another search for it. I was like, why would this song disappear? It's relatively new.
Yeah.
And what they did was they added the deluxe version of the album and got rid of the original version that I'd pulled in. And, you know, it didn't have the logic to, like, just make that swap for me, because they still had the license to the song that I wanted to listen to. But that's a little weird. I don't know if Spotify or any other service, though, would handle that any better.
One thing, I think the best services, I know iTunes does, I think actually Google, iTunes, and Microsoft all do this, is it's important to also have the Music Locker service, because if you want to listen to that music that's not available on streaming, you should be able to buy it somewhere, upload it, and listen to it that way.
Right.
So you can fill in the gaps. Or if you have, I don't know, some weird version of it, like a live version you want to upload, that's why it's really important that they have both systems so you have that fallback.
And
it won't really help with those ones that go in and out, but...
And I'm kind of hoping that, you know, they've been kind of forecasting that Beats is going to have a big overhaul now that Apple's bought it.
Yeah, I mean, and so do you think they'll kill off Beats streaming and just roll it into
iTunes? That's actually a good transition. Thank you, Sean, for doing a good transition into this add-on idea that I had. So when Jay-Z announced this, he had several artists with him, and it reminded me of a guild, right? Like in the... In the classical sense.
Never before has Jay-Z been considered to be in a guild.
You don't know what he does in his spare time.
In the classical sense, like an artist guild or a merchant's guild, and, you know, in the Renaissance period and medieval period, right? And that is, you know, guilds were ways for people to control the marketplace and to benefit from, you know, collecting resources and pooling your resources, right? So I want to plant the seeds and see what you get. Maybe you can push back and tell me I'm crazy, but do you think we'll ever get to a point where, you know, we don't need the studios anymore, the music studios and the record album record companies, because well-known artists will create music guilds, effectively like what Jay-Z is doing. Because right, the next step is because you know Beyonce did this with Apple, like she released her album exclusively without any fanfare on Apple for a while, on iTunes. And so could it get to the point where a group of elite artists just say we're done with our contracts, we don't need labels anymore, we're just going to plop it out on Tidal or whatever service and go straight to the fans that way?
A lot of them are going to Kickstarter. Oh, De La Soul. De La Soul's going to be on the new album. It's happening.
I didn't realize how old they are. I mean, it makes sense
because they didn't add up the years. Since they've had an album.
Everything's paving the way for that. I mean, it's so much easier to just create music. It's so much easier to have that software. But I think the music industry will still always have a space, because you don't realize how many artists are, I guess you could say, manufactured. Like Taylor Swift is a machine.
Sure.
Totally created and built in that way, and I don't think that kind of thing will ever go away.
She's literally a robot.
Yeah, and I remember reading about this whole story about Lana Del Rey, and she got really popular in the indie scene, and Pitchfork was singing her praises, and it wasn't until later that they found out that her father, who is a wealthy person, got together with a few other record execs, and they essentially built this person. And they built her to be an indie person. It's funny. Wow, that's, this opposite thing.
That's iron.
But so I think there's still, I mean, you remember Radiohead did Rainbows for Pay Whatever You Want.
Yeah, and I'm not saying the record labels are going to completely disappear. There's still benefits for, indie labels that people who can't afford their own recording studio in their basement, that sort of thing. But for those people who can, like a Jay-Z, like a Beyonce, like a Madonna, et cetera, who's to say that they stop renewing their contracts with these record labels? And because, I mean, the real money for them is not coming from the record labels, but it's coming from touring.
Yep.
So that's how they're making their money. And, the record label is giving them, the marketing and that piece. But if they can get marketing on their own from another kind of this artist guild, then, because that was part of the message that they kept saying yesterday. It was like kind of this for artist, by artist type thing, right? So anyhow, I just want to plant that seed. I'm not saying that I'm prophetic and saying what's going to happen, this is true, but I can't tell you too much. it'll screw up everything. So let's just pretend like I don't know it all.
If you didn't need another incentive to listen to the show, it's because Josiah knows the future.
All right, let's take a break. I don't know about you guys, but I love books. But unfortunately, I'm a painfully...
Books, what are those?
I'm a painfully slow reader, and I just don't have time for it. But luckily, there is a solution for that. Audiobooks. And you know where you can find them, Sean? Do you?
Audible.com?
You are correct, sir! Josiah, you actually use Audible.com, right?
Yeah, I'm a subscriber for... I've been a subscriber for 2 years. This is going in my third year.
That is...
And, I discovered this when I started commuting. Yep. I drive about 600 miles a week, and I hate it. But the only upside to that is that I get to devour a bunch of audiobooks, and it's just some great performances out there. Obviously, really good stories too.
What are you listening to right now?
I'm kind of in between. I just finished The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
Oh, really?
Why?
This is an odd reaction to it.
Didn't we talk about how I read this in high school and none of us liked it?
Oh,
Do you know why you didn't like it?
I don't know. I didn't read it. So.
Well, it's because you had to read it and you didn't have it on audio. Exactly.
If I heard place author's name or speaker's name here saying it to me, I would have liked it that much
more. Well, that's the cool thing, right? So Ready Player One is another book that we're all interested in. And Will Wheaton reads it to you.
Will Wheaton
is really fun. Reading you Ready Player One. I know I do.
It was really fun to listen to that. And I think he did a good job because of the kind of the nerdy topics. The Alchemist, it's funny. So I don't remember talking to you about it, but I do remember in another podcast, I think it was on Twit, somebody mentioned that book and talked about how it didn't make sense to them and they didn't like it when they were young, but they reread it and it made sense. And I never had I never was asked to read it as a young person, but I remember a friend of mine, his freshman year of college, had to read it, and he kind of gave it mixed reviews. So anyhow, I read it, and the funny thing is that it's about serendipity and coincidence. So that's how I came to read it. And it actually is – it means a lot to me right now at this time in my life. So it was pretty interesting. But that's what I just read, and I'm about to read the Steve Jobs biography by Walter Isaacson, because the new one just came out. Yeah. So I want to read that first one, and then I'll go back and read the second one.
So if you're like us and you like listening to things rather than reading them for yourself, just for you, awesome listeners, Audible is providing you with a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial. And it helps us bring you the shows like The Unwind and Roll to Hit, our 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons podcast. So you can get that free trial by going to audibletrial.com/roll to hit. That was all to say that they're sponsoring the question of the week. Which is, what experience... Oh, so I should probably preface this by saying that I have a tendency to just buy things faster than I should. It's that tax return, man. That tax refund. So I ordered an Oculus Rift. I started, teaching myself a little bit of programming in Unreal Engine and want to fool around with it. And who doesn't want virtual reality goggles? So the question I have is, what experience are you most excited for in VR? Whether that's a game or some kind of, demo or flying to the moon or something?
Yeah, so...
I'd imagine it's not flying with you.
Well, no, so the experience I'm looking forward to is not throwing up or wanting to throw up. So
no barf simulator.
We talked about this a little bit ago, so not the Oculus Rift, the Vive. From Steam, supposedly because of the 90 hertz refresh rate, that doesn't make people want to vomit. So if that can happen, then I'm very excited about space sims like you've been playing lately, and very interested in experiencing some of these immersion type movies. Right, so you're not playing the movie, but you get to see different things. So I think that would be interesting to watch a movie and then talk about the movie, and we literally saw different things. Mm-hmm. Not that we interpreted the movie differently. But I'm hoping for Spy Kids of VR, right? So that's my dream.
Sean?
So I'm actually not as big on movies, maybe because I haven't seen any yet. It sounds like a cool area, but I'm worried that it would be difficult for directors to make something that's solid. What I'm really interested in is experiential games. So I'm actually not really interested in games that play normally and now they're just going to add Oculus support. I want to see the games that are made specifically for the Oculus.
Yep.
Maybe something like a Gone Home kind of thing. Yep. And something that...
Pollen. So Pollen is a similar... Yeah. Like that's what they said they were going for.
Yes, if Pollen is... good. I did not like their demo at all.
We saw them at South by.
Not that the demo was bad. It just you didn't do anything in
right.
it. So, but games like that where they really take into consideration that you're even, I don't want to play this, but a roller coaster game. It would be you feel like you're on a roller coaster.
That's happening this weekend.
So something that like that where they friend. Think. I remember hearing about ideas where they there's one game that Cliff Bleszinski I think made where one guy is a giant person, one's a little person, and you as a big person you just flick the little person and they go flying, and it's just some clever idea, something, a game from the ground up.
I take the opposite approach. I would like to see things that are made specifically for that experience. That said, I'm just so excited to play Space Sims for one, which is how you mentioned, especially because the biggest thing with games today, why they don't work, or one of the biggest reasons is that the menus and things just take you completely out of that system and it's hard to see. But the space sims that are being built right now, like Star Citizen and Elite Dangerous and Eve Valkyrie,
they all have the dashboard of the ship,
yeah,
with all the menus and stuff built into that, which I think is pretty cool. And just Skyrim. Like, I just want to play Skyrim in Oculus. I want to slay dragons first person. Yeah.
You're going to stand right in front as all the flames go in your face.
Oh, it'll be crazy. But yeah, so hopefully by next week we'll have a few first impressions of it.
I think you should play a game where you just live out your life in the exact same way. It's kind of like how Schrute played, Second Life, where he also happened to be a paper salesman.
My life is way too boring to play myself. I'd be doing podcasting in virtual reality.
No, in virtual reality, you'd be on a virtual reality helmet.
Oh, man.
It's meta,
that's
man.
That's trippy. Anyway, let's move on to our last topic of
Final
the week.
Topic.
So this happened today, like hours ago, but by the time this comes out, it'll be earlier in the week. So the term iPad killer gets thrown around really frequently. Like every year there seems to be a device that's released that's either the iPhone killer, something that takes Apple off their throne, right?
Yeah.
And today or this week, Microsoft announced the Surface 3. Which is kind of interesting timing because Sean and I, we were talking about this and that Windows 10 comes out within 4, 5, 6 months. So they didn't wait for that. They couldn't wait. So which the Surface Pro 4, I'm sure. But anyway, so previously Microsoft had two lines of their tablet devices, right? They had the Pro, which is full Windows, basically a full laptop on their tablet device. And then they had just the regular RT version.
Or-T.
Yeah, which, for all intents and purposes, was a complete disaster. Like, they just...
I heard they lost a little bit of money on that one.
Yeah, everything, it was not million? Marketable. There were so many things wrong with that. I mean, the biggest thing was that there was no ecosystem. Nobody wanted to develop for it, so there were no apps. And, not to mention a whole other range of issues. But anyway, so the Surface 3 was announced at that $500 price point, which rivals, the iPad Air and other tablets. But it's being released with full Windows, which is interesting because you're getting a lower, something half as expensive as their normal full Windows device.
Yeah.
But in that same type of form factor, it's a little bit smaller than the Pro version. I think it's a 10-inch screen instead of a 12, I believe. So.
And it's thinner and lighter.
It does have, you can buy the pen with it. I think it's still a mistake that they're not bundling at least the keyboard. I think that's absolutely absurd that it's another $100. So, realistically, this is, a $600 device and not a $500 device.
And just to be clear, so this is, they're running on the new Intel Atom. It's the Cherry Trail chip. Yeah. So these are, I guess, x86. They're not ARM. So they can run any Windows program.
Yes.
Normally.
So that said, though, given the specs of the device, obviously, not too many people have had too much time with this yet. So we don't really have benchmarks that we can go off of. But it's hard to believe that you'll be able to run any intensive application. So it's a little bit deceptive in the way that they're marketing this.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're not going to be able to do photo editing to a large degree or video.
Or at least
you're
not
going
to want to.
Right. So my question is, do you see this as something that can rival the iPad? Who's the market for this? What are the problems you think it's going to run into?
They're looking at me because I use iPad. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I think not that RT was a success by any means, but I like the concept of them offering a new operating system for this tablet device. When they go back, it feels like backtracking to take it to Windows 8 and then eventually 10, because...
Which has kind of been the story of Microsoft in the last 5 years.
Yeah. You talk about the Xbox One rollout is nothing but back,
yeah.
Rolling back.
I mean, everything since Windows 7, basically.
But the idea, I'm not convinced that Windows 10 and right now Windows 8.1 will run in a nice way on a machine with those specs. You're talking about, a high-density pixel screen. Mm-hmm. I know it's smaller, but it's... But it's got a touch screen on there, and I'm not convinced it's going to be a snappy, zippy, holistic feel and experience to it. Whereas if I tell somebody, or if I say, hey, go get the iPad Air 2, I know that for the next 2 years, it's going to feel fast as hell. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can buy in the App Store or download for free, it's going to feel really good. And probably in the third or fourth year, it might slow down a little bit, but it's still going to be pretty functional. Mm-hmm. I'm running with my iPad 2 right now, and that's a really old device. And I'm running the latest operating system. And that's because when they developed it specifically for a tablet mobile operating system on a chip, you know, they took into account energy conservation, RAM conservation, all this stuff. And when they have people develop for it, they're developing for it with that in mind.
Yeah.
You know, so to say that, yeah, you can run anything Windows on this Surface 3, yeah, but I'm not going to run Photoshop on it. Right out of the box, it's not going to be able to run everything that's out there. And so it's kind of disingenuous, right? Like, for the average user to just say, oh, I can get this and it's going to work on all my Windows stuff. It's going to work.
Right.
With that said, the average user probably isn't going to be running Photoshop on a, you know, on that type of device. But it's just – it's frustrating to me that they're mixing their messages. Sean, you look like you want to say something.
Well, so this is not the exact same thing, but I was wondering what's another thing about it. What's the new MacBook running on? Because they're going fanless, and they're using an Intel chip, and I'm pretty sure the only fanless Intel chip is this series, Cherry Trail.
It's Broadwell. It's Broadwell. So that's Atom. This is Core. So sorry, I'm saying this and that. So Surface 3 is running Atom.
Yeah.
And the new MacBook is running Core.
It is Broadwell. But I don't think it's Core. I think it's a different one, isn't it?
No, it is Core because they have an M series. It's like it used to be their UV, ultra low voltage or whatever.
Yeah,
but
Core
so it's the M series.
Right.
It's underpowered. With Apple knowledge. No doubt. It's underpowered. It's you know, it's got specs similar to the
2955U. Well,
no, I was going to say the late 2013 MacBook Air.
Oh, okay.
Right? So as far as specs go, it's like an older MacBook Air.
I think it's less powerful than that.
Less powerful?
Like a, you mean...
Than a two-year-old MacBook Air?
Yeah, Core i5? I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah.
I've seen the benchmarks. Like it's.
Oh, they already have benchmarks?
Yes, it's comparable to...
Because I thought it was more similar to the iPad. But... anyway, back to the Surface. Not to be Debbie Downer, but I kind of feel I have similar things that I don't really know where this Surface fits in. And I think one difference is – so the iPad, there is only one device that you can get that runs iOS bigger than an iPhone, and it's the iPad. The Surface is Windows on a hybrid tablet. So there's the thing is if you're a consumer, well, it's like, okay, maybe I should just – get a laptop. Maybe I should. So there's, and I know Windows and Microsoft has gone all in on this hybrid form factor. And I think it's really resonated with some people, the people who like it or love it. But I know there are some really diehard people that really love it, but I don't think it's resonated with the broader audience. So then you really get into this situation where you're like, well, is there an advantage to getting this over just another laptop? Even though, I mean, the Surface is really well built. I don't think it's ever gotten that rapport in the way a MacBook Air has, in that being just this high quality, awesome device. And because of that, I don't really know where it fits. I mean, I think regular people will probably just get a laptop or maybe even a Chromebook. And then people who need more power will get a different one.
I think it's aimed at people looking for a tablet. I mean, if you're looking at side by side, the iPad Air versus Surface, I mean, they put the same exact price point, right? You're basically all the things that's stacking up. They're saying like, oh, we have 64 storage instead of 16 gig, right? That you get on the iPad. I mean, obviously all this is caveated by a ton of different things, right? That we can go on about.
So,
but I think it's being marketed towards, going to be marketed towards people that are looking for an iPad.
And I would say that, I don't know. So I think a big part of the user experience on the iPad is the operating system and the promise that comes with the App Store and ecosystem. Yeah. And but what I mean by that is any program that I want to run, you know, on this kind of a device, it's going to be in the App Store and it's going to be at a reasonable price. And it's going to work well, and it's going to be designed for this user interface, right? And it's just kind of this seamless,
I don't have to think about it, and it's a high-quality experience, right? Windows 8.1 on a small screen still is shit. It's shit. I'm sorry. It's shit. Like, even with a mouse, it's a shit experience. Well,
we know he's not going to be sponsoring this podcast anytime soon.
I have a Surface Pro 2, and I know that's, you know, you have the Surface Pro 3. It's a bigger screen. It's a bigger screen, but
well, it's still really frustrating. I always have it on a monitor. Anyway.
And that's with a mouse. And so to use that with my fingers, it's so unsatisfactory.
I will say, I think they're betting big with Windows 10 with this. I think that's kind of like, because they're already saying like how you're basically the way that they're pitching this now already is a big piece of it is saying that, oh, you're going to get a free year of Windows 10.
Yeah.
But and that's supposed to be better.
Here's still the big problem. By doing. The idea was that it could be a tablet and a desktop, but I think it ended up being neither. I think it pissed off some desktop users, and it wasn't the tablet friendly enough. In my opinion, I think the Windows 8 start menu, that area, is maybe my favorite tablet OS. The snapping thing works really well, and it's the best version of multitasking that I've seen on any device. Mm-hmm. Tiles are really cool. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, okay, you both own Surface devices. I have a Windows 8.1 device. How many times have you guys gone into the Windows store? And I mean the store, not downloading the store is shit. And so that's the thing. There are no apps being made for Metro. It's all this or modern, whatever they want to call. So now you have a situation where you know, you have this hybrid device, but nobody wants to use the tablet side as a tablet.
That's why they're getting rid of RT, though, is because they.
But the thing is, as Windows 10, what is it going to alleviate? It's really just to pull back the desktop users. So I don't know, as a tablet, is it any better? The OS at its core, to me, is awesome, but there is no app ecosystem because no one wants to make anything for it. And I mean, it's even worse than Android, and Android has a really bad tablet situation.
Yeah, I think that's right on target, Sean. And until they have a lot of potential, right? But until they master that, then I'm not buying this device, and I'm not recommending that anybody buy this device. And I don't mean like personally, like users. I mean listeners, you can buy whatever you want, but I mean specifically, it's
part. Josiah will come to your house.
I work for school systems in technology, and I recommend to them all the time, like things that they should invest in, either software or hardware. And I'm not going to recommend this to any school that I work with. And if they're looking at it, I'm going to tell them all these caveats that because I think it's a kind of this weird hybrid device that hasn't been able to live up on its promise for three generations now. And so until they get their act together, I can't recommend it.
I think the 3 Pro is...
The Pro is a different situation. I'm talking about specifically Surface.
But I mean, I just want to reiterate, I genuinely think, I think iOS, in my opinion, on the iPad has rested on its laurels. I don't think people use it in a radically different way than they used the first iPad. And I think Android has done whatever.
I'm going to push back and say, you know, it doesn't look fresh and new and interesting, but to use it is a very good experience.
Well, to your point,
I can do everything I want.
It doesn't do anything different than what it did. The iPhone is fundamentally different from the iPhone 6, fundamentally in so many different ways, is different than the iPhone.
Yes or no? I mean, I'm going to push back. You don't use any of these devices regularly.
So what do you use differently?
It's not a matter of using it differently. Does it work well? And is it
every
not,
show from
it's,
now on?
It's not a frustrating experience.
Sure.
I use my Windows tablet, it's a frustrating experience because that OS is half baked because they mashed up the desktop and the tablet system. But when I use the iOS on my iPad, it's made for touch. I don't care that it's just basically a bigger iPhone. That doesn't matter. The operating system was designed with touch in mind, and it's easy to use, and it's functional, and it works.
Well, that's why I'm saying so. I think Apple rested on its laurels in that it kept it where it was, and it kept the experience good. The experience was always good. Well, maybe not the iPad.
So who cares if they're resting on its laurels if it works better than everything else that's in its competition?
Because what I'm saying is the reason what disappointed me about Microsoft is because I genuinely think they made advancements that were better than everyone else. Forget Android for a second, because I don't think they've done much either.
Right now.
But the snapping windows, it's the smartest way to do multitasking. And there's rumors that they're going to do windowed apps and stuff in iOS and Android. And then also, tiles are an interesting way to look at apps. It's all touch focus. But sure. The thing is, nobody makes apps for it. Yeah. And nobody makes apps for it. And it even, I mean, the whole design is fresh. Nothing, Android now looks far, completely different from iOS. But there was this feeling like it was trying in a weird way to ape iOS at the beginning. But Metro didn't feel like anything else. It was so unique. But the sure. thing is, they haven't iterated enough to make it, like, I think they're still in the same place they were with Windows Phone 7. And that's why, mm-hmm. so my point of saying all this is that it disappoints me because I think Microsoft did a lot right. But there's more than enough they did wrong that no one, it's like the Zune HD, awesome device, but nobody cares about it because they did so many other things wrong that no one's ever going to try that thing.
You know, it took them three iterations of the Surface Pro even to get something that
yeah.
is good.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a.
I've owned every single Surface device that's been released at yes, some point.
Yeah,
and I can say the Surface 2 is okay, like just as a tablet. But I mean, again, you know, there's no apps for it, so it's mm-hmm. like outside of web browsing, like there's really nothing to do with it. And Office, I guess. So like the Surface Pro 3, you know, it took them 3 years just to get the hardware down. Granted, that wasn't what they were doing, so you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, to both of your points, I think. You know, obviously I love the Metro or Tiles, whatever they're going with, you know, they're deciding to call it
Modern, I think yeah. they call it.
I love that. I think they are trying to do something different. But to Josiah's point, I think they just messed up in so many different areas. And, like, yeah. it's not there. And I think without the ecosystem, I don't think it'll ever fully be there. And that's never going to come, which is why they're going back and making Windows 10 to not be that, you know, reliant on.
But to Sean's point, you know, what you just said, Windows 10, they've been talking about everything being how to bring back those desktop users and get enterprise to skip over 8.1 and yep. go straight to 10, right? And skip over 9
for
apparently.
A free year. Yeah.
But well, it won't be free for enterprise, I'm sure. But
right. Yeah.
But the issue that I have is, again, it's just a really, like, if you have to live with a Windows touchscreen device that's not a 13-inch or larger monitor screen size, it's incredibly frustrating. It's a junky, clunky system, and they really needed, I think, to go back and edit, right? Like, to borrow from kind of Tim Gunn, Project Runway, they just needed to edit, right? So sometimes, who cares if you have, like, this amazing design that's like eye popping if you put 50 million buttons on it and you only needed 3, right? Yeah. Same thing. They
don't like the ribbon?
Yeah, yeah. Like it was good at, you know, green. You could have stopped with the ribbon and the buttons and the lapels. And so anyhow, you know, for them to try to, I think where they should have made good, better decisions about editing was why mash up desktop and the tablet interface. It just doesn't work. You talk about snapping. When do you actually use snapping? Do you ever use that? You can talk conceptually about night and day how awesome an idea and how innovative it is, but if you don't use it, it's a waste of time.
I use snapping all the time. I don't know. This is actually funny because it's coming from an OS X user, because you don't even have snapping on OS X, right? This is actually something I heard. I you know, we listened to The Verge. I remember somebody saying that. So Chromebooks have it, and they took it from Windows, who first introduced Aero Snap in Windows 7. I don't think Vista had it.
I use that all the time on the desktop.
You can do multiple instances. So you, if you want to watch like a YouTube video and, you know, browse the internet or something, or if you want to IM people, you know, be on that service and not have to switch out, just multitasking. And the point is, you're not creating 3 windows, 4 windows, you're creating 2 windows. So you're not doing too much, but it's enough to do something else. Heck, even music, although music controls are probably better in the other menu, but I use snapping all the time. If I on my computer, a lot of times I have 2 halves because I'll be reading one thing while doing something else, and I would
reading one thing while reading another.
Well, so a lot of times I'll have like
you don't need Audible, do you?
I'll watch a YouTube video, but I won't be like really watching, so I might be doing something else.
Yeah,
I totally use it.
Maybe I'm in the minority, and you know, listeners, you can talk about this on the blog.
Sound off in the comments.
Yeah, in the comments, but I don't know.
I think if you get it, because you have a different opinion, though. Because you, like you said before, you don't use any of these devices. Although I guess you do use the Surface.
I use the Surface yeah. literally every day. Yeah.
You don't snap stuff on that?
I don't because really? Because I find the touch interface and the, you know, the modern UI. I don't use any of those apps, right? So I'm always just using desktop. I'm just using desktop.
Just like Chrome browsers, though, you don't snap? Like multiple, or you have a Chrome browser and a
that was one Excel of my favorite things.
I don't use the Snap. I just use the regular what you were calling AeroSnap, right? Yeah, like if you drag it to the top, it fills up the screen, right. And yeah, I do that all the time. But the one with the black bar where you're sliding it in from the side, the Metro Snap.
Yeah.
I never use that. Is that what you're talking about? Well, you use that specifically. That's because that's the innovation we're talking about, right? So let's be clear, because that's if we're talking about that, because the one you were just talking about came from Windows 7. Yeah. It came from Windows, Vista, actually.
Yeah, so I don't get why is that a problem.
So that's not an innovation. You're here talking about how amazing it is.
The same thing.
The snap you're talking about. That. Yeah, that's not innovative.
You know what's going to be funny, though?
Oh, caught him. Caught him. Got him.
Wait a couple years.
That'll do it for this week.
The multi-windows come out for iOS.
Wait for five years, snapping is going to be amazing and so innovative in 5 years, right? That's what you're saying.
Android copied that
already. I'll be surprised. All the Androids have. And if iOS comes out with multi-windows, I wonder if you're going to look at it a little bit.
On record, son.
No, yeah, that's fine. You were talking about how innovative Windows...
It was because touch nobody did it on a tablet.
Windows was the one to do it,
though. Fine. They took it from their own OS, but the thing is, the snapping, the point is, you can only snap two windows, but the idea for doing on a tablet OS that normally only does one program at a time, there's no Windows in a tablet interface. iOS doesn't have Windows. Android doesn't have Windows. That was a very desktop element. So they took it and put it into a tablet interface. So I do think that is an innovation.
Android already
took it. And by the way, I'm telling you, if they add it to iOS, I think you're going to think of
it. They're going to add it to iOS. I know they're going to add
it to
iOS.
And so then, is it not going to be, I mean, it's not an innovation because somebody's already done it, but I don't think I use snapping a lot, and I think if I had a tablet, I would
let's just be clear. Like, what do you use a lot, Sean? Do you use the AeroSnap from Windows 7 or do you use specifically? Right. Exactly. Okay. End of story.
Android's
never use
taking it though.
I never use the
if
new
they get multi-window
tablet
on
tablet.
An iPad. Will you use it?
No, because
you're not going to use it.
I use the AeroSnap.
No. If iOS gets multi-window support, are you going to use it?
That's not the conversation.
Oh, but it is.
No.
Oh, but it is.
This, my Apple friend. This topic is about the Surface 3 and who's going to buy it. And my whole argument...
I already said people aren't going to buy it.
And my whole argument is that it's a confused platform because even though, yes, they innovate with this snapping on a tablet, nobody uses the tablet snap. They use the desktop snap. Right? Because they added both of these, that's what I'm asking people to sound off about. But Sean was making this point about how, yes, he uses Snap all the time. And as we talk about it, he doesn't use the tablet Snap. He uses a desktop
Snap. So what are you going to say if you use whatever they want to call it, snapping multi-windows in iOS in the future?
I'll use it because it will be.
What is the difference?
Because we're talking about a device that has two different ways to snap. You can use the tablet snap or the desktop
I'm just
snap.
About the tablet side
and
right
I'm
now.
Saying
I think they should
if you have
them out.
One that works better, why have both? Just have the one that works the best.
Oh, no. I'm trying to separate out. I totally agree. And I said from the beginning that I don't like that they added desktop to RT. I wish they had a tablet interface. But my point is, I think as a tablet interface, I think Microsoft actually innovated in that. I think their tablet interface, forget the desktop,
yes, sure,
is
but,
better than
But
iOS.
That's the problem. That's the problem that I started with.
Yeah.
They needed to edit.
Sweet
they needed to they needed to edit out the desktop. That was
RT,
a big mistake.
I wish RT did not have the desktop. It feels like when Windows Mobile had the start menu on it. And I'm like, you're so stuck on this paradigm that you cannot get rid of it when you need to get rid of it. And I definitely
I am 100%.
All right, Sean, we both win.
Super
fight. My new goal. Now that we ran out of super fight cards, it's just what topics can I come up with? You know what's funny? I thought it was going to be me arguing with both of you because it's always me defending Windows, but it turned out to you guys argue. This is fantastic. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. Please share us with your friends, leave us some comments, and you can submit questions or topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio, which will take you to our page on the comments this block. You can check us on our other podcast, Roll the Hit, which is a live play D&D 5th edition podcast, which is a lot of fun. and pretty funny, if I say so myself.
I'd give it 5 stars.
It's just as exciting as that debate was. Just with dragons.
Just with dragons.
And also be sure to get your free Audible trial. Man, I got to practice that now that we're sponsored. By going to audibletrial.com/roll to hit, and we'll see you next week.
You vagrant rat!